Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is little Joey Ryder. How you doing today, Joey?
You know, those first two guys who thought Superman was a bird or a plane, why the hell were they so excited? Did they just, like, wash their car or something? I don't get it.
I think it's more that Metropolis, maybe Lex Luthor had blown up all the planes and killed all the birds.
It could be.
Luthor's a bastard.
I just, you know, I can't figure it. You know, I mean, even the old underdog, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's a frog. A frog. I could understand a frog, you know, but I mean, ugh.
I just like how Superman's powers grew even from the first cartoon. More powerful than a speeding locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, nothing less than an exploding shell could penetrate his skin.
And by the time the original soup disappeared, he was throwing moons at the anti-monitor.
He was throwing moons. He could fly to another galaxy in a heartbeat.
You know, and the thing was,
I think the only thing that could hurt him was the fact that the stories were so boring that sales were in the toilet.
And it's really a shame because every so often you run across runs during that, I call it the Uber Superman run. You know, they gave him the, you know, kryptonite, they gave him, and they took it away and then they brought it back and they gave him, well, he's vulnerable to magic, you know, so they tried to do, but they do things like there was a run where they split him in half and one Superman had half the powers, the other had the other half.
Yep.
And I remember because even though they retroconned it away with Crisis, it was still part of the Teen Titans because they showed up. The Teen Titans showed up in the Justice League satellite to do something and they thought, oh, we can get Superman's help. And Superman's, I am not quite the man I am to, you know, in other words, whatever power this Superman had, he couldn't help the Titans. So they had to go on their way. That was always kind of a nice little nod. Hopefully, and I don't believe it did, people would go, oh, something's up with Superman. Let's check it out.
I have a little history behind that, Joe.
Ooh. Go for
Superman
it.
Sales were starting to dip in the early 70s. Marvel had become the number one selling comic company. DC was not doing as well. There were also DC's excuse at the time was they had distribution problems. That's why they canceled the New Gods. That's why they made a number of changes. And if you look at DC between like 1972 and 1977, you see all these first issues for books that lasted between 3 and 6 issues. A lot of that was they would put the issue out, and if it wasn't an immediate sales success, they'd cancel it and replace it with something else. Well, Julie Schwartz was told he had to get Superman sales up, so he went to Denny O'Neil and said, why don't you do for Superman what you did for Batman? Because after the Batman TV show, the book slumped. Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams came in. They started doing a new type of story, basically Batman as a more dark detective type character. And the fun thing is the showcases are finally up to that era of Batman with Batman Showcase 5. And it is, it's like your head flips around from the stories they were doing, which were, you know, kind of goofy superhero stories to all of a sudden, these are horror stories and detective stories with Batman in them. So Denny O'Neil came in to do Superman. They even changed how the cover was set up. If you look at that first one of the Sandman Superman story, the number of Superman, you know, the issue number is really small. And in the place of where they used to put that, it was comics number one superhero book.
Mm-hmm.
And the number one is huge. And they did a long story where Superman lost half his powers. They wanted to depower him. I think it's around that time he got a job at a TV station. They made all these changes. And they really didn't change sales in any way, shape, or form. So they just kind of quietly forgot about it. And Julie Schwartz let Denny O'Neill do Batman and other books instead of Superman. Denny O'Neill to this day says he never really got a handle on Superman. And he brought in other writers and went back to his old ways, really.
You know, occasionally there are runs in that era that were really good. You know, off the top of my head, I don't have the issue numbers, but I know I have them in my collection. It's like a story where this alien comes down and publicly challenges Superman to see who's the most powerful of them all. And they do an Olympic style event and this guy beats Superman. And as he's flying off, everybody's shocked and they're like, why? Superman realizes, and you realize it in an earlier issue where he uses his incredible vision to peer across the galaxy to discover what's up with this particular guy. He's from a planet. He's the only person left on it. And this is whatever his race is there to prove that they mean something. And so this guy basically came to Earth, beat Superman, took off, and went to his home planet to die. Everybody's like, well, couldn't you have beaten him? He's like, I'm Superman. What's one more award mean to me? You know,
That's not a bad story.
You know, there was one story that I remember reading in DC Digest where I think it was, who was the sportscaster at the TV station? I was always ribbing Clark.
Oh, I know who you're talking.
Yeah.
Steve
Lombard, I don't remember, but he was doing
Lombard, Steve Lombard.
Okay. He was doing a show, you know, kind of a rift of, Tonight Show. And Clark Kent was going to be one of the guests. But what had happened was, is the reason why Steve was doing the show was because the host had been kidnapped and was going to be held for ransom unless, and if they didn't pay it by the end of the show, they were going to kill him. And so Superman went on as that person. I forget the name of the host. And basically Clark gets pushed off to the side so Superman can come on this show, and it must be a live show because everybody's all thrilled that Superman showed up. And he sits there and Superman pulls off the mask to reveal the mask he's wearing, which is the host of the show. And he's saying, well, basically Superman and I decided to switch for a day and I just to see what each other was doing. Meanwhile, back at the evil hideout, the two guys who are holding the real host are going, wait a minute, you mean we've been holding Superman all this time? Why doesn't he do something about this? He goes, oh yeah, well, let's find out. Bang. And Superman's gone. And in the course of about five panels, he's moving so fast. The mask burns out. Superman shows up just in time, poof, catches the bullet, proving once and for all he is faster than a speeding bullet. Knocks out the bad guys, takes the heroes. Meanwhile, back at the studio, Steve is all flabbergasted because all of a sudden his guest just disappeared. He goes, oh, well, we got one more guy left. Let's bring in Clark Kent. Clark's not. What? Oh, my God. And then he starts doing jokes again, which just terribly bomb. You know, another run of stories. I think it was when Pa Kent came back. And everybody was like, what happened? How did Pa Kent come back to life? And they do a whole story like that. It had something to do with an earlier Superboy issue, a newer Superboy, not like back in the Golden Age, where Pa Kent met this alien and he gave him one wish. And he says, well, I know I'm not going to be around, but I'd like to see how Clark ends up later in life. The alien pushes him forward in time. So everybody thinks it's normal. You know, oh, Pa Kent's here. And of course, eventually after several issues, we're let in as to why he's here. And when he disappears, nobody remembers. But there's an interesting part there. I think about the same time you talked about when, you know, Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill took over. They did one thing that had been a staple of Superman the entire time. Lois was always trying to find out his secret identity. And then all of a sudden, they just let that drop. And there's a scene in this particular storyline where Pa Kent comes back, where he's talking to Lois and he realizes that she's something special. And he kind of alludes to, like, you know, it's amazing that, you know, that you just don't go out and try to figure out who this Superman character is. And she kind of looks at him and kind of cocks her head and goes, maybe I've already figured out who it is, and it's just not something that needs to be explored anymore.
Again, I like that.
Paraphrasing. So there are always these little gems that would appear in between all the silliness. And what would happen is I would get on board for these things, and it would be really cool, and then whoever that creator was, and I didn't realize it at the time because I was still pretty, you know, young reading, they would get off, and then some silliness would ensure. I picked up the issue where they finally got rid of Kandor in a bottle. You know, I think, what did they do? They put him on a planet.
Yep.
That would disappear and reappear every so often. You know, so it was just things like that. And that led to a funny point in the Alan Moore annual where Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman showed up for Superman's birthday, where I think it was Wonder Woman gave him a perfect replica of Kandor all the way down to the little people. And Superman's like, that's whoosh. He disappears, grabs the current bottle of Kandor, hides it somewhere, comes back, goes, that's great. I have exactly the right place to put it. And I should also mention that particular Kandor was a new society who, I don't know, their planet had been destroyed and they were miniaturized people. So they would live permanently in that bottle and they're perfectly happy to be protected by Superman. But again, when Alan Moore wrote that issue, oh man, that boy had a handle on Superman. I mean, just there are scenes, you know, we're talking about scenes where it can only be done in comic books. I don't know if you want to throw a spoiler warning for a, what, two-decade-old comic book, but, you know, I think Mongol had planted some flower on Superman. And Superman
yes.
was living his dream, and then when he wakes up, and I believe it was was it Tim Drake or was it the?
Yep, it was Tim Drake before they turned him into an asshole.
Yeah, he pulled off the flower. When Superman woke up, I think the flower ends up on Batman.
Yes.
And there's a real shadowed shot of Superman as I think he scared the crap out of Tim. He turns up. Who did this to me? Some guy in purple, and he's over there beating up Wonder Woman, and you hear him go, Mongo! And as he flies through the fortress so fast, they talk about what Mongo's thinking as he hears the yell, and he knows what's coming. He's got Wonder Woman in one hand, and she's unconscious. He's just pummeling her, but he doesn't have time to turn around to react. Bam! Gets nailed. Oh man, you can't recreate that anywhere. That's just like a comic book moment, perfect.
Yes.
So you could, if you had the chops, you could do Superman as powerful as he is, or you could do what Rob Liefeld did with his first run of Supreme.
Well, since Joe jumped right into things,
yeah.
This here radio show has sponsors, ladies and gentlemen. Sponsors, everybody.
And although I will mention that the Midwest Comic Book Association SpringCon Comic Book Celebration is May 19th and 20th, 2012, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds with 100,000 square feet of comic book action. If you go to their Facebook page, Midwest Comic Book Association, they've listed the guests. They've listed the dealers that are part of the super huge marketplace from all over sector 2814.
That's Earth to those of you who aren't reading the new DC 52.
And they also have the flyer that talks about all the other stuff, the grab bags, the door prizes, the costume contest. Even though there's two things to remember. First of all, this spring con will be 100% cray free. I will not be there because I'm stuck in New York or New Jersey.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not in New York.
Yeah, I want to be. But
you're in Jersey, baby.
It'll be the only spring con. I think I missed one microcon in the past. It was the one that was in Bandana Square. And when I first got hired by TSA, I missed the first day, but I was able to come in the second day. But there will be no cray there. However,
it's crayless.
It's Crayless. I happen to know Corey will take care of the charity booth, which will be right next to the charity art auction on Sunday. So you can come by still.
I will.
Say hi to Corey, just like he does every single year. Nobody says hi to me, so, you know, don't matter if I'm there anyways.
There's a reason for that.
The second thing is SpringCon's not a paying sponsor. We just go to it and we like it. You know, if you want more, you can go to www.midwestcomicbook.com. But as far as paying sponsors go,
it's dreamhost.com, the best darn web host in the whole known universe. They host the Solitaire Rose family of websites. I recently paid my hosting bill, and it was much less than it would have been at some other web host.
Which
one? Excuse me?
Remain nameless.
Yeah, they'll remain nameless, but they have far fewer features. They're far less helpful. And who knows, they might get swallowed up by some big soulless corporation. DreamHost will not be swallowed up by some big soulless corporation.
Or Wayne Tech.
They're a big, happy corporation.
Or Stark International.
Or Stain International.
Yeah. Well, I think Stark bought them up. And there is Stain still around.
One of the two.
Yeah.
Joe fixing a drink while I'm talking.
Yeah.
And if you go to DreamHost.com and you put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year. The flaming blue hoodie are you doing?
Gotta have ice.
So, Joe went on an adventure.
Yeah. And it was fun.
He went and saw something that has been talked about
in the news
for over a year.
Yeah. And
has
of course,
injured more people than this show has.
Of course. It's in New York. And of course, this is what, my fourth New York adventure?
At least.
So basically, I went into New York. I had a goal in mind, but as usual, I did find things to distract me. For example, I stopped by Midtown Comics in New York City again to pick up one thing. And of course, I ended up leaving with several, but they have an Avengers versus X-Men exclusive variant that's only available to them. You could go on eBay. I imagine you could go to their website, midtowncomics.com, and buy it for that plus shipping. You go on eBay, pick it up for 15, 20, 25 bucks, or waddle into the store itself, pick it up for 10 bucks. And it's kind of the cover is interesting because it's like deformed babyish type Avengers and X-Men. So it was just kind of fun to pick up. The other thing I picked up, Bionic Man, Bionic Woman. Again, I'm a sucker for these because I grew up with these. And I just couldn't wait to get home, so I read them. Of the two, I kind of like the Bionic Man a little bit more. I don't know if it's because Kevin Smith's still writing it. And that particular issue had the talking heads going on. And Kevin Smith does write wonderful dialogue. The Bionic Woman was kind of a setup. We didn't see how she became bionic, but if you saw the TV show, they kind of incorporate that. So, just something to stick with. Plus, I already read my comics from last Wednesday. And
now, have I told the story of where the Kevin Smith Bionic Man came from?
Was it in a just like the Green Hornet was supposed to be a relaunch?
Well, he was hired to do a screenplay, wrote the screenplay, got paid for it, and they decided not to make the movie.
That's so where Dynamite came from.
Yeah, so Dynamite came in and said, we'll turn it into a comic book. So they went through, they got the rights to the screenplay because, you know.
On a TV show, it'd probably be probably prohibitively expensive.
I don't think so. It's more they want to use the Kevin Smith name. Mm. So Kevin Smith he's given them the screenplay and they're adapting it. He's not actually writing it. They're just taking his screenplay and turning it into a comic book.
Which could explain why it's gone beyond, like you'd think a screenplay for an actual movie would last maybe six issues, but they're already on issue eight and they still haven't dealt with the main antagonist.
It'll be 12 issues, and I listened to an interview with Smith where he talked about how they're really putting everything in there. Everything about the screenplay is just being adapted to the book. So there you go.
Cool.
It can have Kevin Smith's name on it, but he's not the one actually scripting it. They're just taking the screenplay and turning it into a comic.
I will say, well, one other thing I bought, which is kind of cool. I did find a Batman number one, which had been signed by Scott Snyder. And it was signed at Midtown Comics as its little certificate of authenticity. And they just put it out for cover price, which is kind of cool. And I like that idea because I read something that really depressed me. They have flyers, and I don't know if this will be posted before, our podcast will be up before this happens, but Garth Ennis is going to be at Midtown Comics. The downtown one at 64 Fulton Street. Not the one that I keep going to that's near Times Square. Yeah, Thursday, April 19th, signing The Shadow number one. So next time I'm in New York, I will have to go down there and see if I can just score a copy with his signature on it. Because I imagine he signs a bunch more and they hang on to it. And then since I work Thursday and I work Friday, so I can't stay up late to do it, I'm going to miss it. I miss so much. It was the same thing when they did the Avengers versus X-Men. Some stores did parties on Tuesday. And then I guess on midnight, they sold the comic to everybody. And Midtown had all four creators there to sign the book. And you could, I think only 200 copies of the variant got signed by people because they gave out tickets. And you see those going on eBay. You know, I kicked myself because I missed one going for like $50 and went for $60. All the other ones have been going upwards of like $150, $200. You know, just to have all four creators sign in one. So, but that's one of those things where, you know, you get hyped up in the event. You know, they also had the comic where one's Avenger versus X-Men. I'm with the Avengers. I'm with the X-Men. So that was kind of fun.
So who are you with?
Well, we'll talk about that later. I don't want to get on that topic. That's kind of a sensitive topic. So, anyways.
A sensitive topic? What, is it infected?
Yeah.
Hey, they're the crickets.
Yeah, they come out for everybody. But, anyways, I had a couple hours to kill before I got to where I was going. New York was hot. I think it got to about 80. I think it's 80 today even. I mean, here's me. I got my blacks.
We had snow today.
I heard that.
I was driving home and there was snow.
I've got my thermostat set at 74, not because it's 80 degrees outside, but because it's humid. You know, I don't deal well with humidity. So I'm in a nice, crisp building. I can go outside and just warm up anytime I want. But I...
Hershey Rider.
You know, I wandered around Times Square because I had time. I actually did go up the Empire State Building, which was fun. One advice I'll give people...
Did you see King Kong?
No, but they did sell gorilla poop there, so I was scared to buy some.
Did you see Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan?
No, but I did see the building they were looking at.
Did you see Doc Savage?
There was a guy in bronze, but I just thought it was... who's that bronze guy? Greg Hamilton? I thought it was him.
Did you see Marvel's offices from the 40s?
Nope, because they are in the 50s, and I'll probably go to 50th Street next time just to get a picture of them.
Marvel used to have their offices in the Empire State Building back when they were Timely Comics.
Oddly enough, every time I tried to take a picture of Stark, it kind of faded out. So I can't get a picture of them.
Have you seen Spider-Man flying around and swinging around the city?
Funny you should mention that, because the first sighting I saw of Spider-Man is when I wandered over to Toys R Us, who had replaced their entire facade with a huge mural of the Avengers going around the corner. And I got a picture of it on my Facebook, and I'll put it up on Crazy Comics if anybody cares. I mean, how many of you were excited to hear all about Gordon Jump from the last episode? So, and when I went inside, they had this thing, both Captain America and Spider-Man were there talking to people, high-fiving. Cap reached a hand out. I shook it. Spider-Man gave me a high five, and I told him, you know what? I'm gonna go see your play in a couple hours. He goes, yeah, you're gonna love it. Bunch of black flips and everything. The one thing I'll tell you, especially if you do decide to go to New York and do any of these things like Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, if you can buy the tickets online before you go, because it really saves a lot of line going, especially when you go in the summer. I mean, going up the Empire State Building, I mentioned a couple times before, I tried to go, but I cut it short because I was having lunch with a friend. There weren't a lot of people there, but there are a lot of empty, what do you call them, stanchions? Or like in Disney World where you go back and forth and back.
Oh, yeah.
Turn the corner, back and forth and back. And I mean, there literally were dozens of these things for almost anywhere from getting ready to go down the tower, getting ready to go up the tower, getting ready to go through security, getting ready to buy a ticket, getting ready for the – oh, man, it was crazy. If you buy a ticket or if it's really crowded, you go in the middle of summer, buy the express pass, you get to bypass all that stuff. Not the security, but, you know, you just – like I got my ticket and I bypassed the line of people waiting to get their tickets. And then I had to get in line for the elevator, whereas if I had the express pass, I could go right up front into the elevator. The one thing I did get is I did get the you go to the main observation deck where you try to look for, you know, where Hallie met, was it Tom Hanks was up there or something?
Yeah, Harry met Sally.
And, of course, there is some places where there's actually, you know, you can see gorilla footprints against the masonry. But usually you go up to the 86th floor, and that's where that classic, you know, I'm going to look around New York and the iron bars are. And that was cool because you get a wonderful, wonderful view of New York. Pay the extra money, go up to the 102nd floor observatory. That's the one where the dumb ape actually had his foot as he was hanging onto it. And it's glassed in, but that extra 1,250 feet make a difference because now – instead of looking at GE with Central Park around it, you're now looking above the GE building. You can see Central Park. So it's worth the fun. But wherever you go, if you can, try to buy as much as you can online before you get there. Just like I did when I wandered over to the Foxwood Theater to go see Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark. It's the play that's been there. It's been getting a lot of headlines because of injuries and other shenanigans.
Lawsuits.
You know, and the one thing, I when I was in college, I took the obligatory introduction to theater classes and things like that. And part of what they did is you had to, okay, look at the sets, look at the scenery, you know, blah, 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 describe it, talk about the acting, yeah, whatever. I can see where if somebody's not careful, they're going to end up in the orchestra pit. Part of the play, you got a whole section of the stage, which disappears and goes down, leaving a gaping hole. And then, of course, another thing comes up with it or going down. For example, when Spider-Man defeats the villain, and face it, if you're not going to go see the play by September, any spoiler warnings I give you now ain't going to matter. So if you don't want to be surprised, or if you're planning to go to it and you want to be surprised, just end the podcast or whatever. Anyways. It goes down, and then you watch the actor by that, and you could see if somebody wasn't careful or slid wrong, boom, they would disappear real quick. So, but the Foxwood Theater was great. I mean, tons of memorabilia to pick up. I picked up the souvenir book, which has stills from the play. I picked up a button set. I picked up a Coyson hairpin. And you figure all this stuff is probably going to be some type of collectible. Because in my opinion, 90% of the people who are there are probably not Spider-Man fans. They're just there because they want to be. They want to check it out. They might have gotten cheap tickets somewhere. It's kind of like when I went to go see Monty Python Spamalot back home. I'd be willing to bet most of the people in that audience never watched Monty Python in their life. But it didn't preclude them from enjoying the show.
Well, one thing that I found interesting, I listened to another podcast where someone went and the show they went to, the Green Goblin got stuck above the audience. And the actor just spent his time either commenting on what was going on stage or making fun of people in the audience.
That is
which I thought was a great idea.
I gotta give kudos. The actor is Patrick Page. He plays Norman Osborn in Green Goblin. Now, when he plays Norman Osborn, he's kind of straightforward.
Does he have the Osborn hair?
No, but he does have some pretty funky locks. It's all kind of swept back and gray.
I will say, I'm watching Spider-Man, the animated series, and they've given Harry and Norman Osborn normal hair. And it's just not the same without the weird, almost cornrows
that
Ditko gave them.
Oh, my God, look at that hair. What's wrong with it? I can't look away. So I got one question for you that occurred to me while I was watching this play. Have they ever said in the comic series what happened to Norm's wife?
No, not that I'm aware of, other than passed away.
Oh, did I write? You know, if Norm came back, I could write some. I would write some fan fiction that make Norm is her bitch. And she comes back, and she's the one that's, you know, she hasn't been really paying attention to what Norm's doing, but now that he's come out twice and embarrassed the Osborn name, she would come back to kind of put a rein on him, and she's worse than he is. That would be my thing. In the play, basically Norm is trying to make some type of advancement in genetics to make super people in order so they can live with global warming, raising tides. That's why the spider comes down, bites Peter, and the size of the spider that came down to hit him gave me the frickin' creeps. Ugh. You know, yeah, I mean, it was big. It had to be as big as his head, and the legs moved. Oh, my God. And I'm not normally one to get freaked out. And I was, like, up in the second balcony. That in the theater, there's three places to sit. You got the orchestra, the main floor, second balcony, third balcony. If you go, try to get on the first floor or try to get as close to the edge on the second or third floor as you can. And I'll explain why later on. When the accident comes that Norm tries to invest, he straps himself into a device to, you know, take in all these advancements that he's been working on because he knows Spider-Man was one of his creations. He just has no idea who Spider-Man is. And that's what sets him off to become the Green Goblin, ends up accidentally killing his wife, which makes him go kind of loony. And that's when you get into Act Two. And when Patrick shows up as the Green Goblin, he is friggin' hilarious. He comes down. He's got songs that he sings. Freak Like Me Needs Company. That's where he introduces the Sinister Six. But before he does that, he comes down and he talks to people and he goes, you know, there's a lot of people that need improvement. And whoever he's looking at, he goes, you know what I'm talking about. He does the He comes down as he's singing. He points at people. People shake his hands. And later on in the show, there's a scene where he's waiting for Spider-Man and he's playing the piano, singing the song about Manhattan. And he gets into this low note, which is kind of like I can't even do it. He held the sucker for like a minute and people were just cheering. I think he's got the chops to do the improv and it's just, he steals the show. He chews the scenery and he just takes it, you know. The gentleman plays Spider-Man and I've got the playbill here. Reeve Carney.
So he's a Carney.
He is. The Peter Parker Spider-Man and he does a fantastic job. I mean, he's got the bookish worm. He reacts awkwardly around Mary Jane. Now, I know for a fact, Corey, you can't go to this play because Rebecca Falconberry, who plays Mary Jane Watson, is hot. Oh, I mean, and she can sing. Just a gorgeous voice. I mean, I was in the second balcony, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm sure glad they turned the air conditioning on because she was awesome. Tiger.
Ah, they're the crickets again.
Oh, trust me, the crickets, if they saw her, would be cricketing. That's for damn sure. Anyways, she was good. As you're watching it as a fan, they kind of weave in different plot points, you know, how it's an origin story. It moves forward and you see the Sinister Six. The music is fantastic. Watching the stage, like I said, go up and down and things that come around, and you know, it was a treat. It was a lot of fun. Now, of course, the real reason you want to go, you want to see what it's like to see Spider-Man jump around the theater. I don't care about the movie. I don't care about what Alex Ross has ever done. When you see Spider-Man turn off the dark, you will know what it's like to see a real Spider-Man jump around and fight and just bop all over the theater. He literally landed on a little platform 4 feet in front of me as one of the scenes where he's jumping around fighting the various villains. And he just, you know, I don't think I'm ruining anything. It wasn't necessarily Reeve Carney. I'm pretty sure it wasn't, because at any one time the way the action worked is you'd see Spider-Man would come swinging across stage and take out the villain. And then there's another Spider-Man who swings the other way. And you said, there's no way that same guy could have gotten around in the harness. And you know, when you get to the end of the play, you'll see they have, my guess would be, actual stuntmen that do a lot of the actual stunts. I counted 1, 2, 4, 6. I counted like about 6. The reason I say that is at the end of the play, and it's inevitable that Spider-Man gets unmasked, because obviously if you're going to kiss an actress as hot as Rebecca, you might as well be unmasked for it. I swear, damn, I should have been an actor. I should have been. Anyways, there were two things that gave it away. First of all, Reeves' mask didn't fit as well as some of the other stuntmen, so you could almost tell it was him. You know, when it came time for him to take the mask off, and you know, he fights the final fight against Osborn without the mask. And then there's a scene at the end where he's actually doing the actual swinging, and he holds on to the guide wires a little differently than some of the stuntmen. Most of the stuntmen, as they're flying around, they don't hold on to the guide wires that are propelling them across the theater. They're just spinning and jumping. And I mean, when Spider-Man first shows up, he takes a jump, flips 3-4 times, and lands right on the edge of the stage. If you're lucky enough to get the front stage, he lands about 2 feet in front of you. And the people in the front row are like, whoa. Yeah, he landed in front of me a couple times. He landed up above in the upper balcony right in the front. A couple times, they would run through the audience. You'd be sitting there, and all of a sudden, to the left of me was a Spider-Man running past along the balcony. He shoots a web out. You know, he's basically simulating fights. If you're lucky, you're going to get hit with some of it. And then he disappears, and then boom, he's on the other side of the theater appearing. But when they have Spider-Man in the air, flying, you don't even notice the wires. It's just so freaking amazing how he does that. And the final fight between the Goblin and Spider-Man is just phenomenal. And, you know, you're watching them, you know, when they finally connect, just amazing. It was fun.
Well, good. Well, I thought
music, acting, play. Oh, of course, the one thing they don't let you do is take pictures, which is too bad. And I could understand it. You know, you're flying through the air with the greatest of ease, and some bobo takes a flash right in front of you.
Yeah.
But I did accidentally take a shot of the curtain, which was a big Spider-Man thing. J. Jonah Jameson was in there too. I mean, if you do get a chance to see it, there's a couple ways. Like you said, you can just buy the ticket. I wanted to get the first row, so I just went and bought a full price. You can try to get discount tickets online. There's a place in Times Square you can line up. You gotta get there early, and then you show up and they see what they have available for 30% off. It's for that day only. You may not get Spider-Man. You may get something else, but not every seat was full. But at the end of the play was over. Patrick came out again, and they were doing a thing for, I do not remember the organization, but they deal with people who have AIDS. That people, they may have recovered from the AIDS through drugs, but they're still living with it. Men, women, children. The organization also deals with, cervical cancer, breast cancer, other types of cancer. And they were taking donations for it. And at the end of the, when you walked out the theater, the people who had been in the play were still in costume accepting donations. If you gave like $25, you get a certain premium. If you gave $100, and I almost went for this one, you could get the Spider-Man play poster signed by everybody. But what they were doing that was real special is they were doing kind of an impromptu auction. And here you've got Patrick in full Green Goblin array running an auction. And it was for, it's starting at $200. You get a pair of glasses worn by Reeve, aka Spider-Man. And he actually put them on. He said, there, now you know for sure I did put them on. Everyone would get the autograph, would get to go up and meet him. And they started bidding at $200, which I could have done, but Patrick kept it going and going, and it got into a bidding war between two people. You'd almost think it was watching Nick post from The Source when he's at the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund.
Going nuts.
Kept going. And it ended up, $2,000 went for the charity. Just phenomenal. And it was just, kind of a nice little thing. When I left, I tossed $5 in the bucket and wandered out into the New York 80-degree heat.
Now, since you saw Spider-Man, I have two questions.
I saw him twice.
There, in the original version of the play, before they shut it down and rewrote it, there was a character called Arachne, kind of a spider goddess.
She was there.
Okay. So they didn't completely eradicate her.
No, no. She ends up, it starts out Peter Parker's in class with Flash Thompson, blah, 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 blah. And he's giving a, his nerdish, again, this is pre-radioactive bite, his nerdish book report on this goddess. And she comes down and they explain everything. The actress who performed her, and I'm going to, see if I can't find it quickly, because she should be like in the top. Christina Sejos, fantastic voice, just awesome. And she appears several times. You know, basically she's almost like the muse for Spider-Man, you know. And, you know, for a guy who, like you and me, Corey, who have watched Spider-Man for ages, don't do the math, please. There's a lot of little themes, that show up, like, you know, Spider-Man quits because he disappointed Mary Jane and didn't show up to her opening. And J. Jonas Jameson gets the costume and Spider-Man's got to steal it back. And, even at the end, the last thing when we see, the actor coming down for his curtain call, he's doing the classic Frank Miller upside down hold as he comes straight down from the top of the theater and flips onto the stage and takes his curtain kabbalas. I mean, just a lot of fun. But they didn't totally get rid of her, if that to long-windedly answer the question.
Okay.
You shall still weave, and you shall weave forever, nevermore in the light. I'm just, like I said, I'm just looking through the program book, or I should say the souvenir book, just to see if there's any other things that come to mind, but I think I covered the highlights. Like I said, interesting enough, when you get to the back of the book, they do a little dissertation about Spider-Man, and they actually did a few throwaway references to the Fantastic Four. But there's a thing written up talking about Spider-Man's first appearance, Amazing Fantasy 15, blah blah blah. Why Stan Lee did that? He made his needed a hero more grounded than the FF, more human than the Hulk, more relatable than Thor. Took an awkward teenager with incredible arachnid-like abilities, the Amazing Spider-Man, as depicted by Lee and artist Steve Ditko. Blah, 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 unexpected hit. Different comic books, Marvel team-up, Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man, live-action show in the 70s, newspaper strip During the 80s, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends was a smash on Saturday morning. Did a sleek black costume to bring in Venom and Carnage.
And they don't talk about the 60s cartoon?
Nope, the Ultimate Spider-Man. Oh, wait a minute. Yep. Broke into animation with one of the catchiest theme songs ever. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Which is kind of disappointing because I'm surprised they didn't actually pull that into the play somewhere. I would have thought they'd have done that. But I blame Bono of U2 because he did a lot of the music there, and it's probably – he was just – I mean, granted, they stuck in Vertigo, you know, the song they they wouldn't bring in Spider-Man. Spider-Man does it. Oh. Seriously, I was expecting to see Stan Lee do a cameo somewhere. They talk about the Tobey Maguire play.
How about Stan Lee Mania? Did he show up?
No, they're still in court. And the final line, it says, to keep up with the adventures of Spider-Man, download the free Marvel Comics app at marvel.com.
Ooh.
I don't know, what do they call it? Comic store? Forget about it. And of course, like I said, when I bought the Inevitable Snoo of the Years, I was figuring two things. First of all, what was cool? What would I care about years from now? And what
can you make money on?
Exactly. It's like when Gruber was in New York years ago, he actually got to go to the Marvel restaurant they used to have here. And he picked up stuff from that.
Did he steal a menu?
He should have if he didn't. When you walk into Spider-Man, you also get a chance to take a picture of him. And then, of course, when you go back to take your, you know, pay for the picture, you could get yourself a nice little $40 souvenir book with Spider-Man, which I thought of. But when I saw the picture, I looked like a goober. They said, you can always go retake it. I said, yeah, I think I'll do that. And ran to the restroom because, you know, 3-hour play, I don't want to have to get up and take a rest break. To quote Minnie Pearl, or the cute little girl at the end of Hee-Haw, that's all.
Joe made it through the Spider-Man musical, and it is now time for a time-honored tradition here at Crazy Comics and Stories.
Tales from the Shop.
We don't have time for that this week because your story went on way too long.
I'm a blatherer. What can I say?
But we do have Freaking and Geeking.
Woohoo! Who sponsors this?
Or Geeking and Freaking. And it's sponsored by BarkCop at BarkCop.com, a political humor website on the left side of the equation. Here's his ad.
Hi, my name's Bart, and I got a little radio show over at BarkCop.com that we call it the Tequila Treehouse. And on the radio show, we talk about a lot of things. You know, we talk about sports, and we talk about sex, and we talk about TV, and we talk about movies. But really, we're not talking about those things. We're usually talking about the politics of the sports and the sex and the TV and the movies and that. So if you go to BarkCop.com, you might get to hear a sample. Actually, the radio show is for the subscribers, but now and then we open it up to the general masses, or we play some snippets on there trying to tease you into subscribing. But that's over at BarkCop.com, the Tequila Treehouse. Try it. You might like it.
That's BarkCop.com.
Bart. Hey, Bart.
So, geeking. Joe, what are you geeking about this week?
I spent, if you promise not to tell my wife, $50.
I don't think your wife listens.
I don't think she would. That
says something about her.
Although I will tell you, I hit a new high with how much I spent this weekend going to Spider-Man play and everything. So.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
No. And you know, that's the thing. I go up into something like the Empire State Building. I want a souvenir with me, but 9 times out of 10, I'll look for the big ass coffee table book that, you know, here's the entire history of the Empire State Building. But usually they don't have that type of stuff. So, you know, I pick up the souvenir book or whatever. But online, as you know, I am a big, big Babylon 5 fan.
Yes.
And for the longest time, Straczynski has had somebody, and I believe his name is Jason Davis, categorize everything leading up to Babylon 5. And beyond, all pretty much everything. And you're talking massive amounts of stuff from the GE days. And that's explain to the good people what GE was, or Genie.
It was Genie.
Yeah.
And it was like AOL or CompuServe or Q-Link. It was kind of before there was a World Wide Web. The internet was basically kind of a big, huge message board and email. So there were these companies that had nationwide bulletin board systems, and one of which was Genie. because GE, as a defense contractor, was tied in with the internet, and they've
that's when Al Gore kind of put
Al Gore invented the World Wide Web.
Oh,
and it's more that he put in the legislation that allowed the creation of the World Wide Web.
I thought he maybe came up with the W.
No, one of them. Better than Bush.
The reason I mentioned Genie is because J. Michael Straczynski, the creator of Babylon 5, was very, very big in it. He was probably one of the first people to actually use this technology to get a fan buzz going. You know, we would call it virtual marketing now. He like was on the ground floor of this, and he had people going and interested in what he was doing. And this guy, Jason Davis, I believe is his name, with I believe his wife Cynthia Davis, Jan M. Schroeder. I feel like I'm at the Academy Awards. I'd like to thank Dave and Michael Wharton for proofreading, and Jacqueline Easton for publishing design and marketing, and City Marketer Dan Denman. Anyways, for years, they've been going on Cafe Press. Corey, would you explain to the good people what Cafe Press is?
That is a self-publishing organization where you can publish T-shirts, books, and Cafe Press gets part of the money, and the person who publishes it gets part of the money.
They've been doing for years.
Years!
And you're talking before I even was aware of it. They had this, like, 16-volume set with all the minutiae that any Babylon 5 geek could possibly want. And they published it. And they published it on Cafe Press for a limited amount of time. When it first shows up, they give you $20 off. Then you can buy it for $70 if you don't buy it right away, and so on and so on. I actually lucked out and got a complete set of the first one, because what had happened is the guys who are doing this, I believe it's go on Cafe Press, look up Babylon 5 books, you'll find them. But they had these deals where they had the entire set. Now, because the books had gone out of print, they were showing up on eBay for like $15 to $2,000 a pop. I mean, well beyond what you paid for it. So they had a bunch of sets left over, and I won't tell you how much, $800, that I bought a complete set of these things for. It was one of these things where they had extra sets left over in case somebody got theirs damaged or there was an error. And now they just want to get rid of them. So they had a drawing. And, you know, I figured, what the hell, put my name in the drawing. I'm not going to get it. Well, apparently there weren't a lot of people doing it because I won. So I was able to buy it. What they're finally doing is pretty much all the books they have now are out of print, but they're doing a kind of a 6-volume set called Echoes of All Our Conversations, where they're taking various interviews by a gentleman, Joe Nazareo. I don't know. I'm terrible with names. I know his face if I saw him though. And they're putting it in this book form, and it's basically according to season. Like the first book, he's talking with Peter Jurassic. Those of you on who like Hill Street Blues remember him as Sid the Snitch. He played Lando Malari on Babylon 5. And so all these different interviews he's done, and it can be someone just intimately involved with behind-the-scenes stuff. He talks with Greg Arzarnowitz and Rob Sherwood, who were the makeup department. And he asked some questions like, you two start working together on Babylon 5. Is it difficult to balance the business side of things with the creative element? So, I mean, you're talking, this is serious geek stuff. What makes this special run even more special is they're adding on some really cool goodies. First of all, you get a disc of actual interviews that this one is, the first one I got, it's on a CD. It's Peter Jurassic and Andreas Katsoulis. You remember him as Commander Tomalak in Star Trek. He was the one-armed man in the Fugitive movie with Harrison Ford. I mean, he's basically an actor who's been around forever. 1997 interview, because Andreas passed away a few years ago. So you get this bonus disc with them. You get a couple collectible postcards. And, of course, one of them I absolutely love. I'm using it. I mean, this is a quote for everybody. Ah, arrogance and stupidity all in the same package. How efficient of you. What makes this particular six-volume set interesting is that they're being autographed by the actors, and he's announced the first four people that are doing it. The first one is autographed by Peter Jurasik, and then he also puts a special message on it as his character, Ambassador Lando Malari. And I love reading because you get the page where he's done the autograph, and it goes, "To my good and dear friends, the Centauri Republic thanks you for your kindness and loyalty. Sincerely, Ambassador Lando Malari." So the first volume's out. You can pay full price if you want to get it. The second volume is now available, and I actually found the website. It's b5books.com, which I believe, again, it will tie you into Cafe Press. You can pay for it, PayPal, whatever. The second volume, it's on sale now because for the first 2 weeks they drop it $20. Bruce Boxleiter, I say his name right? Guy who plays Commander Sheridan. He was in the original Tron. He was married to, what's her name from Little House on the Prairie, but you know, celebrity marriages, they never last. And if you're a B5 geek, and I mean, I am just, oh, look at it, I'm drooling already. And you know, with all the other stuff I've got, I mean, my Spider-Man in the Dark, Empire State Building, 9/11, Avengers versus X-Men Round 1, this is what I'm reading and geeking on right now. So the question I have is, how many of you save the actual ticket to various events you've been to, be it a rock concert or the first Star Wars? So I should save the Spider-Man Turns Off the Dark Foxwood Theater ticket, even though they ruined it by taking the edge off it.
Well, it's good to take the edge off.
True.
So what I am geeking about, I've got a couple of, I've got a showcase and an essential. And then the library had two big volumes at the first order at in-stock trades I place once I have a new job. I'm buying these books. So,
hell, all you need is a quarter of chocolate soda and your A to Z Alice Cooper records, and you're set for at least a week.
I mentioned earlier, Batman Showcase Volume 5 is out. Mm. And it covers the early 1970, and it has a lot of the classic Batman, Neil Adams, Denny O'Neil stories. Now, one of the things I like about it, I have the big volumes of the big color Neil Adams Batman. The problem with those is Neil Adams goes back and re-inks and recolors his work, if at all possible.
He's so fussy.
And I don't like the recolored re-ink stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dick Giordano did a great job inking his work and made it look less sketchy. Because when Neil Adams does his own inking, it looks kind of sketchy because he wants to get that energy of the initial pencil drawing. And the computerized coloring just covers up so much of the 70s artwork because it wasn't made for computerized coloring. The current art is drawn for computerized coloring, but back then it was drawn for the old four color where they're cutting out acetate sheets and pasting it down sort of thing. But these are just black and white, the original inks, and it also has the stories not drawn by Neil Adams and the ones not written by Denny O'Neil, which were written by Frank Robbins, and they're just as good. Irv Novak did the art, who's kind of, he draws in the same sort of style as Neil Adams. He's not as good as Neil Adams, but he still draws in that hyper-realistic style. The best way I've heard Neil Adams described is he draws people the way they would look if they looked that way. He draws what you think a superhero would look like in the real world. He was one of the first artists who did that sort of very realistic drawing. The other one I picked up is Captain America Volume 5. No, 6. Volume 6. The Essential Captain America Volume 6. It's the last 10 issues of Kirby's run. Then what came after Kirby, they Roy Thomas came in, kind of wanted to do a, we know everything about Captain America, we don't know anything about Steve Rogers. So they did a quest. Who is Steve Rogers? What was his history before he went in to be, you know, to take the serum and get the shots and become Captain America? He was a 4F weakling, and that's all we knew about him. So Roy Thomas started filling in the behind the scenes. He left midway through. Actually, he left after a couple issues. Don Glut, who also helped Roy Thomas on the Invaders toward the end, did some scripting, did some plotting, and then Steve Gerber came in and finished up the story. I've got a few issues. It also ends with Steve Gerber and starts with Roger Stern's first run on Captain America. So you've got a really wide range of late Bronze Age Captain America that's just great reading. You've got Kirby art. You've got Sal Buscema art. It's both those volumes. I'm really enjoying reading them, having a lot of fun reading those. And then the books that as soon as I get me a new full-time job or a second part-time job that pays well, I picked up two more volumes at the library of the Simon and Kirby Library. Starting in the late 30s up until the mid-50s, Jack Kirby's business partner, co-writer, co-artist was Joe Simon. And they worked together up until about 1957, 58, when the comic business was so bad they went their separate ways. The Simon and Kirby Library is reprinting a lot of their stuff. I already picked up the Best of Simon and Kirby, which is kind of an overview of everything they did. But there are two other volumes. One is Simon and Kirby Superheroes, which reprints the stuff that they owned. So you've got some Fighting American stories. You've got some Captain 3D stories. You've got the first story of The Fly, which was done for Archie. But Joe Simon was able to somehow keep the rights so that he could reprint it. And then the other one is the Simon and Kirby Crime, which has a lot of their crime stories from the late 40s and early 50s. The superhero one is fun. I understand the Fighting American, but I've never been a huge fan of that. It started serious, but then they couldn't take it serious because it was Fighting American, Commie Smasher. Mm-hmm. They turned it into a kind of a superhero comedy book.
Mm-hmm.
But the crime stories they took very seriously. Kirby was, you know, he grew up in a rough neighborhood. He knew a lot of criminals when he grew up. So those stories, they do, it's not just, you know, the standard post-war crime stuff. They also do historical criminals and this other stuff, and it's just fascinating reading. Those are the two books, and they're both in hardcover, and I think they're both like either 40 or 50 bucks. So as soon as my latest job search is done, I'm going to InStock Trades and ordering those two bad boys, or going to, you know, some used book website and buying them used, but I imagine they're going to be pretty hard to find used. I am also geeking about Avengers versus X-Men.
Dun, dun, dun. I have read the first issue.
And Joe, you said you had some stuff to say about it, so I'll let you go first.
Well, first of all, before we can get any further, we have to establish once and for all, are you with the Avengers? Are you with the X-Men?
Having read the first issue, I'm with the Avengers because Cyclops is a dick.
Oh,
we can
talk then.
He's almost played as a villain in this story.
You know, and I've been reading a lot of stuff. It's kind of fun because the people I work with at the airport and one of my colleagues out here that is a traveler like I am, I've gotten them, they're either, they knew it themselves or they're actually excited about Avengers versus X-Men. And the one guy I'm with, he's more of an X-Men guy. You know, he's given excuses for Cyclops and I'm kind of like, you know what? The point of the matter is the last thing we heard is blah, 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 blah. Logan told me you'd have issues with me coming here. I was hoping you and I could come to an understanding. There's a destructive force heading towards Earth, and we have to figure out a way to stop it. And Cyclops' response, respectfully, get the hell off my island. And he takes a shot And of course, he doesn't get nowhere because Cap's got his bloody shield. But as Cap gets up, he says, "Avengers assemble." And that's pretty much the end of one. Now, I've been reading comic book resources, and they've been doing a lot of talk about, okay, here's the X-Men, here's the Avengers, here's what's going on. Here's some wild cards, people that aren't on the board, Gambit, Xavier, you know, and there's just a crap load of questions I have, mostly because of the Avengers. Or I guess I should say X-Men, because I've been reading of X-Men. So I know who Hope is because I followed along when Cage disappeared in the future to run away from Bishop. Not quite sure how that ended up. That's what reprints are for, Wikipedia. I don't know why Magneto's a good guy. I don't know why Cyclops is such an asshole. I don't know. I don't know what the hell's with Jugger Colossus. But Wikipedia is pretty good at trying to get you caught up. So I tell people, between Wikipedia and maybe going to pick up a few back issues or something, you'll be able to get caught up in no time. It certainly won't take away from any of the fun of reading this. I mean, I know there's a lot of guys online, the bitchers, that are like, oh, I can't believe this and that and the other, and I can't believe. I'm like, you know what? Something's up. There's even an article talking about, I think in the Secret of, one of the Secret Avengers, somebody's dying. And of course, they're everybody's speculating as to who. And one of the speculators was like, well, Cyclops is, because he's playing the Captain America role in Civil War. You know, Cyclops is basically just being an asshole. And no matter what, or I think he's, in my viewpoint, he's more Tony Stark, but being that they're all on the same side, it'll be interesting to see what's going on. I enjoyed the first issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. And as we record, in 2 days, issue round two is out. And I'm also going to do something I don't normally do. I think I'm going to buy all the tie-ins.
Ooh!
I'm that geeked on it. The first one that came out last week as we record this was... was it Avengers or New Avengers? No, I think it was New Avengers. And basically it was just, it starts at the end of Avengers X-Men, ends up at the same spot as issue one, but it talks about, this is basically a debriefing of, the X-Men. You know, you saw, or I should say the Avengers, you saw in various previews and in the book itself, Avenger, Captain America, and Iron Man, you know, debriefing the president. Well, this kind of is them debriefing the Avengers. And the most significant thing that happened there, you don't mind if I spoil it, do you, Mr. Strode?
Spoilers, everyone.
When he, everybody's there. There's a couple interesting comments between Wolverine and Spider-Man. Spider-Man's like, "You run a school? Yep. With kids? Yep. You? Yep. Running a school?" Wolverine stops. "What's that?" "I liked your other costume better." "Oh," Spider-Man goes, "I can't believe you're hurt, so hurtful." Storm, upon hearing the news the Phoenix Force is coming, utters her famous phrase, "Goddess," and takes off. Black Panther stays behind with the Avengers. And the one key thing is that the Red Hulk is their tactician, as well as being a powerhouse. And he really, really lays the line out, you know, says, "You guys are going to be fighting your friends. You're going to be fighting people you've been around. Got to get that out of your head. Got to take them down." And then we come back to the very point that Avengers versus X-Men ends at. Great backstory. I enjoyed it. So far, that's the only one that's come out. And then, of course, this week, I imagine, will be more. I think I've rambled on long enough. What about you, Mr. C.? Hey, Mr. C.
Well, I've read the zero issue and the number one issue, and they're setting up the conflict, letting us know why there's a conflict between the two teams. Haven't read the tie-ins that Joe's talked about, but what I liked about it was there is an actual issue between the teams on how to handle things. And as I said, Cyclops comes off almost as much of a villain as Magneto used to be, which makes me wonder where they're going with it. I think it would be really interesting if they continue down that path and deal with that, because we just had the big X-Men schism, which is, you know, there's one group of X-Men that believes that they should be training and interacting. There's another group that says, no, we've tried it Professor X's way. It's failed. It's time for us to be our own entity. It's time for us to be on our own. They're not thinking of humanity as an enemy, but they're thinking of humanity more as we don't want any part of it. So I'm hoping they're going to continue down that route. I'm hoping that they're building towards something big. And one thing that I've already heard rumor-wise is that the end of Avengers X-Men, there's going to be a huge reboot on the X-Men, which there's a part of me that, didn't they just do a reboot with Schism? Starting everything over with new number ones? But they're doing a big reboot. Some people are describing it as Marvel's version of 52, the DC 52. So I'm very excited about where it's going. I think with comic book resources filling in a lot of the backstory, Avengers versus X-Men is something that somebody who just has kind of an idea about the two teams could pick up, get into, and read. The other thing about my recommendations, the Batman, Captain America, and the Simon and Kirby books, you don't need to have ever read a comic book before to enjoy those. Now, the Simon and Kirby stuff's going to feel very dated because it is 50, 60, 70-year-old stuff. But the crime stories especially still are very well done. I like Kirby's stuff a lot. The Batman stories, they may be 40 years old, but they don't feel like it. You pick them up, they feel like really good. The kind of Batman stories you'd want to read. And the Captain America stuff, that's Bronze Age Captain America. Overwritten, overwrought. Cap's always got something he's belly aching about. So freaking Joe, what are you freaking about?
I want to go home.
No, I can understand that.
I've been here too long. It's actually not a long deployment. I mean, were we podcasting?
Not as long as
were we podcasting when I had my first 7 month deployment?
Yep, I think so.
That was long. So you think a 90-day deployment would be a little less harsh. But, you know, I really got to give kudos to our armed forces, men and women in military, because they're gone for a friggin' year. You know, and they're going to a foreign country where some bitch trying to shoot at them and kill them. You know, I'm working at an airport. I mean, granted, it is New Jersey. But for the most part, nobody.
And there are people who are calling you names and yelling at you.
Yeah, yeah. But they're not taking
but
shots.
That's not because of work. That's just because of who you are.
Yeah, and they're not taking shots at me. So I feel good about that. But the it's just I've been gone, you know, and like I said, I'll try not to, if I freak about it next time, just slap me down because, you know, I'm kind of bummed I'm missing the con. That's pretty much it. You know, like I said, the problem is I'm only picking, when I go to the stores, I only pick up what I really, really want. There's always stuff that, you know, it's like when I was a kid, I used to make piles. Okay, this I got to read right away. This I'll get to. This is the last stuff. And then eventually I started switching that because I found I never read the third pile because that was always so-so stuff that I never got to. I mean, there's still runs of Electric, Strike Force, Moriarty, Legion of Superheroes. They were always in my third pile. I have never read them. They're in my collection. I ain't going to get rid of them until I read them. But I may never get around to it. And with DC 52, 62... whatever it is, it's not going to be 52 in my book because the worst thing that can happen to me is I'm going to get somewhere where I stop reading comics. When I stop reading comics, I do other things. And then I very well come back and I'm like, why am I dropping $50, $60 a week buying this stuff? I don't care. And it takes, usually I'll read a series of books and that'll get me back into it where I go, okay, that's why I keep coming back reading comics. It's extremely easy to quit though. You know, I mean, granted, you know, downtown New York's got some kick-ass comic stores. And, you know, I took the trip to Jane Silent Bob Stash. I got two comic stores within 10 minutes. I may have other comic stores nearby I'm just not aware of. But when you're traveling, it's very, very easy just to quit and not do anything. And that's, I think, the biggest problem with comics. I will mention one thing, though, about Avengers versus X-Men that a lot of people may not know. We talked about the free digital copy that's in the back of the Marvel comics. And Avengers versus X-Men has that thing. And it's real interesting because I did it with my Avenging Spider-Man. Once you peel that sticker off and you get the code, it doesn't go back on. So if you're one of those bobos that have to have a mint one, better buy two copies. But
Maybe that's how Marvel's going to get their sales up.
Well, this may work. If you do download the digital copy, Mark Waid and Joe Quesada have an extra story only available online at the moment that deals with how Nova ran into the Phoenix Force, what he did to get to Earth so he could warn everybody, and why when he showed up, he practically destroyed a plane, the city, and was all crumpled up in a steaming pile. And it's not Rich Rider, by the way.
Right.
So if you're looking for backstory, go ahead, peel off, get your free digital copy. Expires next year on May 5th, 2013. So, and again, it even says that there's a bonus copy that you can get. I think it's part of the Marvel Infinite comic line. So they're adding little bits of story. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get bored in a few days and I'll probably rip that sucker off and go ahead and download it. I already did it once with the Avenging Spider-Man just to see how it worked. And it was okay. But now you have a reason to.
Yes.
What are you freaking about, Mr. Strode? If I may use that formal, Mr.
You may.
Thank you.
I am freaking about something that has nothing to do with comics.
As was I, but continue.
Well, you were talking about how you know.
I just want to go home.
You're having a crisis of faith around comics, it sounds like. I'm catching up on wrestling.
Another thing, if I don't watch weekly, I could just as easily let it go.
But I'm about a month and a half behind, so I saw the episode of Raw, I think it's in Boston, where The Rock was going around the city talking about John Cena. And The Rock was great. His promos were spot on. It was hilarious. He had one bit where he had this wheelbarrow full of John Cena merchandise. And he's going through and he picks up the John Cena cologne. He says, John Cena cologne, I'm going to smell it and tell you people what it smells like. He sniffs it and he says, it smells like fear, fruity pebbles, and possum piss.
Which is really, now, seriously, was there a fruity pebble John Cena cereal box or somebody just yanking my chain?
Yes.
Damn.
Yes.
It's not on eBay.
But when The Rock gave those promos, it was 1999 again when you and I were just hooked on wrestling because it was the most entertaining show on television. Then we got to the in-ring confrontation between The Rock and John Cena. And The Rock comes out and he's very serious and he's, you know, basically laying out, I am going to beat you. I am going to kick your ass. At WrestleMania, I will destroy you. And through the whole promo, Cena's just standing there with that big, goofy, doofus smile on his face. And it's almost, the look on his face is like, he's making fun of me. And The Rock, dead serious. When the camera was on The Rock, it's like, this guy is going to kick your ass. And then they'd go over to Cena, and Cena's smiling and looking at the crowd, kind of. And what I wanted was for The Rock to pull an audible. I wanted him to grab Cena, put him in the rock bottom, because when The Rock said, I want you to look into my eyes to know how serious I am. Look into my eyes. And Cena's big goofy smile, looks at the crowd, does a shrug, looks at the crowd and smiles. Think back to 1999. If The Rock said that to Steve Austin, Steve Austin would have been right there, eyes on. They both would have taken it very seriously. They're talking you into the building. They're talking you into buying WrestleMania. We knew it was fake. We knew it was fixed. We could even tell who was going to win. But still, after those promos, we were like, oh my God, we got to get this pay-per-view, Joe. Oh. We got to get this. With this, I just wanted The Rock to break character, beat the crap out of Cena, and leave him laying there in the ring and go, that's what you get for not taking this seriously. So, yeah, I got a little emotional and angry. And a lot of it was because there was this great lead-up of The Rock just mocking Cena and making fun of him. And then when they get together in the ring, Cena cannot take it seriously. He's got to do the, aw shucks, it's just a show, crap. It would be like if you're reading Avengers versus X-Men. And you have the scene where Cyclops and Captain America are arguing. And just as Cyclops says, get off the island, Captain America kind of turned to the reader and went, oh, okay, now we got to set up because we're going to fight for 12 issues. So he's going to get really mad. Isn't this exciting, kids? Yeah. I'm also freaking over the fact that we've now had 4 episodes of Mad Men. There are only, 8 left. And then I'm going to have to wait another year or two. I want this show on every week all the time.
Oh, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Well, the thing is, with Walking Dead, you almost want those breaks because the tension gets so heightened that you get that, oh, good, I can sit down and process this for a little bit. But with Mad Men, it's like, no, you want to be around these characters every week. You want to see what they're up to.
Now you make me feel bad because I put a link on your webpage for your Facebook page for the Walking Dead Mad Men. Might be too intense for you, Corey. You might have to wait.
Okay. The only other thing I'm freaking about, and I'm not going to go into too much detail, the sales figures are out for the month before Avengers versus X-Men. Both Avengers and the X-Men are selling around 60,000 copies, which is the lowest they've ever sold, ever. Mm. With that, even when the X-Men was canceled in the 60s, they were selling around 150,000 copies. Even at the height of the comic book depression of the 90s, the X-Men was still selling around 75 to 100,000 copies. Marvel's really got to do something, and I'm hoping Avengers versus X-Men kind of revs things up.
Well, judging by the amount of variant covers, the amount of buzz, I mean, seriously, the big questions I get weekly are, what's up with Magneto? I thought he was a bad guy. How come Wolverine's with the Avengers? You know, people are real interested in this. People who haven't necessarily read comics for a long time, and they're coming in and they're checking these out. And if Marvel can keep every other week, these people know, I'll come in 2 weeks and pick it up. They're not going to come in every week necessarily pick up the crossovers, but they definitely are going to stick around for the main event. And I think, aren't they into a second print already? Didn't round 0 and round 1 sell out?
I don't know. I haven't. My schedule last week got really crazy, so I'm not. I'm still catching up on all the news from the Chicago Con. But I do know that they say that Avengers versus X-Men number 1 sold 250,000 copies, which that's more than the unbelievably hugely successful Justice League reboot for DC 52 sold. So I am hopeful, but I was listening to a podcast on Word Balloon where they recorded a panel on crime comics. And Ed Brubaker, who does Captain America, Criminal, which Criminal is one of my favorite comics ever. I would say if you've never read a comic book before, just go in, pick up one of the trade paperbacks of Criminal and enjoy, because he's got this deep love of the same sort of 50s crime novels that I do. Brubaker and Greg Rucka were talking about how in the past, before the direct market, when superhero sales went down, rather than panicking and, we got to do something about superheroes, the publishers would just, let's try love stories. Oh, they're selling? Okay. Let's do crime stories. They're selling? Okay. They're doing horror books. And they would do these other genres that would sell, knowing that everything is cyclical and superheroes would come back. Even Marvel, when you get into the early 70s, the superhero books were selling, but they kind of dropped a little bit, so Marvel looked around and, the Warren horror books are selling. DC's got some horror books that are selling. We'll do some horror books. That's where you got Werewolf by Night and the Frankenstein Monster and Tomb of Dracula and all that stuff. But now if the superhero genre doesn't sell, because the editors are all superhero fans, and the creators are all superhero fans, and the distributor is all superhero fans, and the shops are run by superhero fans, they don't go to these other genres. And Brubaker talked about when Fatale came out, how there was, in the review, it was, this is a really great book, but I think there are too many crime comics being published. And Brubaker said there are 4 crime comics being published. Yeah. And that's too many when there are around 150 superhero comics being published every month.
I was like, when we were talking back in Infinite Crisis, or was it Infinite Identity, where you figured out who did the murder already by issue 2?
Yeah.
Because you read murder mysteries. But guys like me and 99% of the comic fan world who had never read a mystery, this was awesomely cool because we had never seen that in comic books. And it was, you know, like I said, you figured it out because they just took, they did the tried and true formula. And for everybody else, it was like, neat.
So, well, it was a real surprise, but if you'd read novels in that genre, you knew it already. One of the things I like about the comic Criminal and also Fatale, Brubaker is almost a student of the crime novel genre, and he's putting twists on it so that it's not so predictable. You can pick it up, and I like that he has all these threads that come together at the very end of the story like a good crime novel. My favorite of the criminal trades is Last of the Innocent. Have you read that one yet, Joe?
No, I haven't.
That's the one that basically is, they're disguised fairly well, but it's Archie all grown up. And he married Veronica. And he finds out Veronica's cheating on him.
What is the name of that one?
Last of the Innocent. Cool. It was the last criminal trade that came out. And one of the things about my overnights, I've had to do some overtime. I've had to do some extra shifts, which thank goodness now I can pay rent. The library in Eden Prairie, one of the guys who works there also works at Uncle Edgar's. So he makes sure that they get all the hard case crime novels as they come out. I went on a tear last week. I read all 5 of the new hard case crime novels. As it came out since the beginning of the year. And that genre, I really enjoy that genre. I'm now going back and reading more of the highbrow crime novels from the 50s and 60s. And I think one thing that would help comics is if they were more diversified. I listened to Mark Wade on that same Word Balloon podcast, which I might just post on the Crazy Comics
and
Stories.
Sure, why not? This is like the 5th time you've mentioned it.
And Wade talks about one of the reasons he wants to do digital comics is so that he can do other genres. He could do horror comics. He could do love comics. He could do other things. I love superhero books. I love them. You come in my house is full of superhero comics. But I like the other genres too. I like the crime. I like the horror. I like the autobiographical. I even like some of the love comics, Cray.
Hey, I've got a pile of them. Bought them cheap. I haven't read them yet.
Simon and Kirby's love comics from the 40s and 50s. I was used to, when I was a kid, you know, my mom would buy a love comic for my younger sisters, and I'd read it, and it was one of those things where, you know, you're a kid, it's a love comic, eh. But then I read it a little later, and it's, wow, these are written for for 12-year-old girls. Simon and Kirby's weren't. Simon and Kirby's were written for older readers. And as you read them, it's like, they're really getting into, some pretty heavy issues. I think there would be Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim's a love comic. There's some superhero-y things, there's some video games, there's this, but it's about a guy who falls in love with a girl and all the complications, but they can't be together, and, da 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 da. And Scott Pilgrim, after the movie came out, sold more copies than any other comic book in Barnes & Noble that year. So, that's a pretty long freaking, but I'm freaking about how it seems like comics are kind of collapsing in on themselves, and they need to explore other genres. And, Joe, you've known me since 1990. I've always said we need to get comics out of comic shops and into the general readership. Mm-hmm. What I'm hoping is this digital comic rush we're seeing is going to do that in the same way that when the manga books went into bookstores. You could barely sell the most popular ones. Barnes & Noble could sell everything. And yes, the genre is pulled back a bit.
Actually, there was just something online talking about it starting to rebound. And I think they want to call it the Borders effect, because when Border went under, all that stuff got liquidated.
Yeah.
Now, people aren't necessarily going to Barnes & Noble, but they're starting to go into comic shops again.
Well, that'd be good. Let's hope the comic shops are smart enough to order it.
Well, the ones that do. Again, the source back home, they have I haven't been to the new store, but they had a huge wall in the old store. Lord knows what.
I imagine it's bigger now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we've lasted long enough. It's not a scary huge thing not a scary huge episode like the Avengers one, but this one's going to be fairly long.
Oh, yeah. Because once you start talking, you just don't shut up.
Says the man who did an hour on the Spider-Man musical.
Oh yeah, I did see that, didn't I? Hey, you know the coolest thing?
So, remember, everybody, as we say every week, the comic we like the least,
and
we
the play.
Still like better. What?
And the play.
The comic and the play we like the least, we still like better than the comic and the play you like the most.